Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast, the show that brings together Michigan's top cannabis growers, advocates, and business owners to offer a fresh and honest perspective of Michigan's cannabis industry. Stick with us to get the lowdown from the people who have been on the ground floor of cannabis business in Michigan and gain insights into where the industry may be heading.
Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast. I am your host, as always, Ryan Basor, episode 18. And today, we're very excited to have Matthew Schweik on. He is the Deputy Director of MPP and is here to talk about what just happened last Tuesday and some other news in Michigan. Matt, thank you for being on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And today we got Kevin Pybus over at True Cannabis in Lansing. Kevin, how is your day going?
A little bit hectic, Ryan, but we're getting the handle, buddy. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been a hectic week. Tom Beller over at Real Leaf, speaking of some hectic weeks. How you doing, Tom?
We're surviving, man. Yeah, we had our internet go down last week, and that was brutal. But now we're on to harvest number 24 today. We started, so things are moving forward.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank congratulations, you. Buddy.
Yeah. So, as always, I wanted to introduce our guest and kind of tell you a little bit about what my personal experience and how I got to know Matt as far as when he came on the scene in Michigan. It was, as many people know, in 2016 and 17, we tried with MI Legalized to get legalization on the ballot and didn't happen. Got the signatures, but got them too late. So, once that happened, I think Michigan nationally, people, we have a network here that's built up. MPP originally helped us legalize in 2018 medically, but we have this network, a little bit of a wild network, I guess some would say, but, you know, and MPP came in and talked and worked with people like our friends Robin Schneider, Jeff Irwin, Josh Hovey, who are all on the Redemption Foundation board. Came in with MPP and teamed up with the activist community too, and did it with MI Legalized, which is not an easy thing. And got to know Matt that way. He directed the whole campaign, and we have a lot of thanks to give to Matt for coming in and doing that, and doing that all over the rest of the country. I actually met Matt a couple times, but one time I do remember probably the best time was up at Shanty Creek for the MICIA event, and I think we were on the bus together, either going to Shorts or going home from Shorts. I'm not quite sure. It's a good time. So, you know, that's that. Matt's got a lot of great information. We had Aaron Smith on a few weeks ago pre-election, and now we got Matt Schweik on now post-election. Doesn't get any better than that to find out what's going on with marijuana. So, Matt, I will be quiet here. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, let's probably start right off with the elections after that.
Sounds good. Great to talk to you again, and good to talk to Michigan people. I'm still so proud of that campaign and proud that I got to play a role in it. It was a really great win because that was the first legalization win outside of the Northeast or the West. And I think it showed a lot of people that this wasn't just something that gets passed in so-called liberal parts of the country. So it was a great win, and great people involved in that campaign. The MICIA event, I got a hero's welcome. It was wonderful. Sometimes afterwards, you know, there's some people in the state that don't like me so much, but Michigan, it's been all love post victory. So Michigan is a special place in my heart. I love working in the state. So a little about me, I'm the deputy director of the Marijuana Policy Project. MPP is a nonprofit political organization, been around since 95. And we do most of our work at the state level, do a lot of ballot initiatives, also do a lot of legislative work. We played a big role in Illinois and Vermont, the two legalization victories that have been achieved legislatively. Awesome. And I joined back in March of 2015. I was hired to run the ballot initiatives. Done that for three cycles now, helped lead the Maine and Massachusetts campaigns in 2016, the Michigan campaign we've talked about in 2018, also the medical marijuana campaign in Utah, which was cool. Another cool victory. Yeah. And then in 2020, I've been pretty much focused on South Dakota and Montana. I was also working a lot on the Nebraska medical campaign until the Supreme Court there kicked us off the ballot. And, you know, been talking to the folks in Arizona, Mississippi, and New Jersey who've all run great campaigns. And yeah, we were really pleased with the outcome. Obviously, a clean sweep for marijuana reform at the 2020 election. And in particular, really happy about South Dakota, Montana. Not only did we win, but we won by good margins.
Yeah.
And in Montana, we got 57% and 58% for the two initiatives. And that was tricky. That's the first time we had to do two ballot initiatives at the same time to legalize marijuana in a state. And then South Dakota getting 54% on legalization was just an awesome outcome. I thought it'd be a little closer than that. And so a great election day for the marijuana movement, for MPP. And it's just awesome to see the momentum that we have across the country.
What are some of the, can you kind of go into some of the differences on each state's law, if you have an understanding, like Montana, you know, as far as are any of them is home cultivation, or I don't believe New Jersey is, but it's kind of a little more in depth. And then Montana is fascinating because for a lot of us in Mirrored, Michigan in 2010 with the federal raids, when I got raided, start happening out there. And, and then it they kind of had a major blowback on that state on their medical law, and even I believe got reversed. So it's great that they've the people are supporting it. But sorry to ramble on there. I'd love to learn a little bit more about the law and each law. I'm sure you know a lot about it, but just kind of an overview compared to Michigan.
Yeah, Montana's policy. First off, just to explain, why were there two initiatives in Montana? Well, the reason was 118 authorized state law to set a minimum age at 21. And then initiative 190 was the actual legalization policy. So that's how the two worked together. They were both passed. And the legalization initiative 190 builds on the existing medical program in Montana. And much of the policy is really drawing directly from existing medical statutes in Montana. Home grow is permitted. I believe it's four plants per adult with a maximum eight per household. And so we expect, that was a popular provision when we did our drafting process. South Dakota, there's also home cultivation. If you live in a municipality, it does not allow sales. We took a little more conservative approach in South Dakota. But both those states allow home cultivation. Arizona, I'm fairly certain, also includes home cultivation, but I'm not an expert on that initiative. And like you said, New Jersey doesn't have that yet because New Jersey is it's a little bit different. It's a legislatively referred ballot question, which means that the legislature said, okay, we are going to place this on the ballot. And now it's up to the legislature to work out the details. And so different states took slightly different approaches, as you'd expect, based on the input they got from stakeholders. But you're right that there are parallels between Michigan and Montana in the sense that both were hot spots for federal crackdowns. And Montana really had its whole medical program kind of crushed and then restored after a 2016 initiative was passed that kind of brought it back to life. So, there's always complicated factors in making that transition from medical to recreational. I think Michigan has worked through them very well, and I'm hoping Montana can do the same.
Awesome.
Hey, Matt, Kevin over here at True Cannabis. We've seen a lot of work, as we go through. We've got almost the majority now of states that have medical legislation. We were super lucky to have you guys come in and help us in Michigan a few years back. We're super grateful. What is it that you guys look for when you come to a new state? What makes you decide who you're going to target next? And whether it's medical or rec, or how do you go about that? You mentioned New Jersey with the legislator actually putting a ballot proposal together. What is that the first time that that's occurred? How does that work? Who decides that?
Well, yeah, with New Jersey to start, to my knowledge, this is the first time that that's happened. Every other ballot initiative has been what's technically called a citizen initiative, which means that citizens can group together, collect signatures, and force their way onto the ballot. And 24 states allow for citizen-initiated ballot questions. But every state empowers its legislature to place questions on the ballot. And that happens all over the place for different reasons. But this is, to my knowledge, the first time that a state legislature has placed a question on the ballot. And so that is different. And how did that come about? Well, there's been popular support for legalization in New Jersey for a while. The problem is that politicians couldn't agree on the details. Yet the governor was elected, I believe, in 2018 and talked a lot about legalization. He ended up with a big fight with the Senate majority leader, who kind of controls the Democratic Party. I'm not an expert on New Jersey politics. I don't really think I ever want to be. But there was a lot of infighting. And ultimately, the best they could do to respond to this popular support was to put it on the ballot, because all these politicians knew that support for legalization was very high in New Jersey. So they said, okay, we can't work out the details. We got to give the people something. Let's put this thing on the ballot for them to pass. And so that's kind of the New Jersey story. And hopefully now that there's this clear mandate from the people, they can work out these differences. They feel even more pressure to get something done because the people just approved this policy. But, you know, there's still the threat of it, of them getting divided over the details and this dragging out. And I know there's a lot of advocates in New Jersey are going to be putting pressure on the governor and the legislature to come together and figure out the details and implement the will of the people without delay. To answer your other question, how do we decide where to operate? I think let me answer the ballot initiative side first, and I can talk about the legislative. You know, on the ballot initiative side, the first thing you're looking for is popular support. For me, it's not a proper use of a ballot initiative to go into a state where the support's under 50% and you're trying to convert people to your side. I think a ballot initiative in any state, its proper use is when a majority of the voters support something and they're not getting it out of their representative democracy. They're not getting the policy outcome they want out of the state out of the state house or the state senate. And after a few legislative sessions, the advocates try to get something passed. Well, their only recourse is to take it to the ballot. And so for me, the first box is, do the people of this state want this policy? And then from there, a lot of it has to do with resources, right? You've got, as advocates, we have limited resources to run these ballot initiative campaigns. They're very expensive. The opposition has a huge advantage financially because they don't have to pay for a signature drive. Right. So we spent $800,000, I think $900,000 on our signature drive just in South Dakota. Well, I think $1.5 million in the end on our signature drive in Montana. Opponents don't have to worry about those costs. So you got to make sure you have the resources. And then I think part of it is prioritizing the states where you have the biggest impact, you know, a high population state where there's tons of arrests occurring. You can do more good in the world by running that. But then there's also the political side. You know, getting South Dakota was a big win. That's a really conservative state. It sends a loud message that this can pass anywhere. And now we've got the number two Republican in the Senate, John Thune, representing constituents that approve legalization. So there's a number of factors that go into it. And on the legislative side, it's similar in the sense you got to see a path to victory through the House and through the Senate. So if you know that there's a chance to work through with the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, it's those political factors that determine whether you can actually be successful. I could delve into a lot more, but it would probably get boring. But there's a lot of factors, and those are just some of them.
Well, hey, Matt, this is Tom with Real Leaf up in Kalkaska, Michigan. And it seems like nationwide there's a huge support, majority support for legalization of cannabis. And it seems like the biggest hurdle when it comes to states, and as far as I can tell in my own experience working with the state of Michigan with our own licensing, is having the support for regulators to kind of de-escalate the boogeyman aspect of cannabis regulation, having a group of regulators to come together and kind of help new states as they come into the fold with legalization. And I believe that the CANNRA is a new group of 19 states with regulators that are now engaging and offering a forum for these new states to say, hey, you know, or even states that are dancing with the idea or they don't understand cannabis, but they can speak with policymakers and regulators to kind of help guide them. And I'm wondering if, you know, what your thoughts are on that?
I think it's a great development, and I saw the article earlier, and it's one of the many tabs I need to read later, because it's a great idea. And sharing best practices, learning from each other's mistakes, learning about potential pitfalls, also at the local level. There's a lot of, I think, information that can be shared in terms of how to handle this locally. And so I'm definitely going to read that article, read up on that group. I think it's a really positive development. And hopefully, you know, potentially down the line, that group could help, particularly in South Dakota, where we just have this blank canvas, right? No state has ever done this before, to pass medical and rec on the same ballot. No state has ever set up a recreational marijuana system without first having medical there. So I think in that state particularly, there could be a lot of application of this. So I think it's a great development. Regulators sharing best practices means smoother implementation processes in future states, and avoiding, you know, unnecessary regulation. I think that when it comes to marijuana, the inclination by default is to regulate more, right? Oh my God, it's marijuana. We gotta think of every regulation we can come up with. And in the end, some of these things are unnecessary, right? And so I think learning those lessons as well could be really valuable. So I think it's a great development and something that's going to be helpful for policymakers, for regulators, and people like me who are trying to affect political change.
Well, and also make it easier for states that haven't
totally
engaged. Yeah. So,
yeah,
it's a good thing.
A little follow-up question on it kind of revolves around that, Matt, but it also kind of revolves like where we're going in the future now. Obviously, depending on the Senate, how that goes, if that actually flips, that's probably the biggest deal for cannabis reform, I would think, moving forward, and what it looks like with a Biden administration. And but like as far as like people like us, you know, I have a brand and I'm part of some other businesses, and Kevin's a processor and a grower, and same with Tom, and I'm here retail shortly. You know, we're in it, we're trying to make it this new organization, and then would it help, and what are your thoughts on how do people like us still survive? And when it does go federally legal, is there going to be a state's opt-in, like we have a local opt-in here? Or, you know, is states going to be able to decide to not sell across borders or not receive? Or do you think it's just going to be all one big free-for-all and, you know, let the chips lie? So that's a concern. We all want full legalization. We never want anyone to go to jail for it, but we would also still like to be able to survive.
It's a great question, a really great question. Essentially, your question is, what's the future of the marijuana industry once the federal government takes action? And I think I don't know if I can really offer an opinion on what Congress is going to do in this day and age, but I think I can lay out, you know, different scenarios. I think there's a decent chance that that nothing happens. Maybe safe banking gets included in something, and that's the extent to which let's assume for a moment that the Democrats can't win more than one of these Georgia Senate seats. If that's, and I'm not saying I hope that's going to happen, but let's assume that they only win one and Mitch McConnell still controls the United States Senate. I think there's a decent possibility that, you know, safe banking alone is the only thing he's really willing to seriously consider right now. But then you have to think, if that's the only thing that they can pass the Senate, will progressives in the House accept that? Will they say, no, we're not going to have just the banking provisions pass and help the people at the top and not do anything for anybody else? We're not supporting that. I think that's possible, right? If it's just safe banking, then I think things are basically the way they are for the next 2 years. If the Democrats take the Senate, you're still only going to have 50. If they win both those Georgia seats, they're only going to have 50 votes. So they're going to be beholden to moderate members of the party. So how ambitious is that federal reform going to be? I think it's unlikely that it's the, you know, the totality of the MORE Act. And I guess what this all boils down to is, I think it's unlikely in the next 2 years that the federal government's going to change its law in a way that lets marijuana flow freely across state lines. I think there's a good chance it's still going to be a state-based approach, and you might have a situation where if two states agree to allow marijuana to go between the states, that will happen, but it's not forced upon a state. In which case, you know, operators within specific states that have licenses will be in the same position they were before, unless their state decides to engage in some kind of compact with another state. If it all just plays out in the marijuana reformer dream's way, in the sense that we get everything, I think that those who are operating dispensaries are going to be in a similar position, because you can't move that across state lines, right? You can't move a brick and mortar business that has a place in the community with customers that are there. I think the cultivation will change a lot more, the product side of things, but I think the dispensary side stays somewhat similar. But I've said a lot of different things there. I think the most likely situation right now is that Mitch McConnell does keep control of the United States Senate for another 2 years. I think it'd be hard for Democrats to win both of those Georgia Senate races. And if he does, you're not going to see transformational change at the federal level. But there's a lot of different ways it could go, and it makes sense that people like you guys that are believers in the cause, that want good policies for the American people, you're also thinking about your business, as anybody would. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are thinking the same way you are. And I wish I could predict what Congress would do, but I think giving you a taste of the different ways it could play out is the best I can do right now.
Thank you.
Hey, Matthew, we're talking politics here. When we first started here in Michigan and we started approaching politicians about, you know, getting some regulation in place, you know, we were kind of the joke of the room. You know, they would take our money for their campaign and then kind of make stupid, you know, weed jokes and, you know, laugh about it. And we were not taken seriously. And then, you know, once legislation passed and we started making some leeway, I mean, like, they're running to get our time, you know, at this point. They know that we have funding. They know that our say is important. What are you seeing when you go to new states? Has their tide kind of changed as well with what's happened in other states? Are you starting to see people more openly embracing this from the political side, knowing that their constituents, you know, truly do support this? Is that something that you're seeing when you move forward? Is it becoming easier, so to speak?
It's a great question again. And I think the answer is yes. I think in terms of the perception of the marijuana reform movement, we are taken more seriously as time goes on. And I think that's because we just keep winning campaigns. It's hard to continue to dismiss people as silly potheads when they keep kicking ass at every election. Last time, you know, we just keep winning. So, you know, when we go into South Dakota, for example, I feel like we were taken a little more seriously than we would have been a few years ago. We weren't just kind of dismissed as silly pothead legalizers. They knew that we had a track record of success, and that we knew what we were doing, and that we were going to run a really strong campaign, which we did. So I think every year with more successes, legislative or ballot initiative or otherwise, that perception is kind of fading away. But you're right. A few years ago, that was the total perception. You know, yeah, maybe they legalized in a couple states, but come on, they're not going to do that here in Michigan, or they're not going to do that in Massachusetts, and they're not going to do that here in Utah. And then what do? We win. And so, yeah, once you win, they start taking you very seriously. But even now, I think they take us more seriously than before, even before we win, because they've seen what we've done.
Well, yeah, and I think it's kind of funny. Ryan and I have joked in the past about, you know, they've kind of like picked on the sleeping giant. You know what I mean? You kind of bully somebody and you make fun of them and whatnot. And then one day that bully just punches you square in the nose and, you know, the tides change, you know? And I feel like that's what's happened here. They've really kind of ruffled the feathers of some really determined and motivated people that have a lot of belief in this cause. And I think it's great to see us making such progress on the state level and on the national level. It's really great. And we appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, we constantly get underestimated as you know, whether you're a marijuana reformer like me or a marijuana entrepreneur like you guys, we're constantly underestimated because of kind of cultural norms of, you know, marijuana is just almost humorous thing or unserious, but we're actually very serious people. We're true believers in a cause. We believe in freedom. We believe in fighting injustice in our society, and we believe it very strongly. And for the entrepreneurs, these are people that have backgrounds of success in other realms of industry and very determined. And I think when you have somebody who's starting a business that they're passionate about the business, but they're passionate about the social cause that goes with it, don't get in the way of that entrepreneur, because those people are very driven. And I think, you know, over time we're changing perceptions. And the number of times I hear people say, oh, I went to this dispensary in so-and-so place. It was so professional. It was so clean. It was so nice. It's like, yeah, they're well-run businesses.
Yeah. What did you
run
expect?
By smart people. Yeah. Like, it's not just some dingy head shop with weed. It's a regulated, serious business that wants to succeed, and you shouldn't really be surprised anymore. But I hear that less and less over time.
That is that's good. That's an awesome point, Kevin. And yeah, we do talk about that. We talked about that with the Attorney General's race as well. It's pretty funny. You know, Matt, you came and we legalized the end of 18. Now it's the end of 2020. And, you know, marijuana, sometimes we joke about that too. 1 year in marijuana sometimes feels like 5 years or a decade. So, like, the three of us here have been doing it for 11 to 15 years, like right at the beginning. And just, you know, we've kind of, you know, came up. When I first started going around town, I grew up around Lansing. No one, everyone's making fun of me, not taking me serious. And now, you know, we go to a Lansing Chamber event and everybody wants to talk to you about marijuana. It's just nonstop. Everyone's, you're like the bell. We went from being the outcast to the bell of the balls in Lansing. And now there's, you know, 1,000 jobs in Lansing and marijuana alone. It's evolved since you've been here. Cannabis professionals are getting elected to the school board, things like that. So, where does Michigan stand? We're proud of our law. We're really proud of it. We think it's the best one. You know, we think our economy and our just as far as the culture of it's going to keep going faster because of that. But what's kind of your take on Michigan? For most of the people that listen to this are Michigan marijuana in the industry, so it'd be good to hear. And you know, what do you see us as far as in the Midwest and the East Coast and moving forward, our place in the world and in America?
Well, I think Michigan has handled its own business very well. And sometimes in these states, after we run a campaign, I stay very involved, making sure the legislature doesn't do bad things, making sure the regulator does things correctly. And Michigan was very self-sufficient in that regard. You know, very shortly after the election, it was clear that the MICIA was coming together, and yep. My friend Robin Schneider, who worked on the campaign, was going to spearhead that. And Michigan demonstrated a self-sufficiency, kind of said, you know what, we got this. We don't really need a lot of hand-holding. We have a lot of legitimate medical operators who've been through political fights before. We're fairly unified by the standards of the marijuana industry. And so it quickly became clear to me, I didn't have to worry about Michigan. Michigan was going to take care of itself. And not every state's like that. So I think that's one way in which Michigan kind of exemplifies is a little different from the rest. And it seems like, you know, I haven't followed any the developments with anywhere near the level of detail you guys have. I've been too, you know, my head's been stuck in other states. But from afar, it seems that things are going well overall, and that, you know, there's always hiccups. It's not an easy thing to make the transition from medical to recreational, but it seems for the most part that things are going smoothly. Jobs are being created, revenues being generated, businesses are opening, cultivation's happening. There's a healthy level of competition. So, you know, yeah. From afar, it seems like Michigan's doing a really good job.
Yeah, Michigan has some pretty interesting licenses too on the adult use side. We were fortunate enough, and well, I don't know how fortunate it was in hindsight with the Rona and everything, but November of 2019, we got the first event license in the state of Michigan, which was, my knowledge, the first state license of its kind to allow cannabis events. And so we got to work starting to plan events out through the summer, and of course, coronavirus came by and pretty much 86 that whole thing. But we're going to continue on and adapt. But these, you know, we have the consumption lounge license option, the micro business option. How are other states? Do they have the t- type of licenses like that or equivalencies that that you see here in Michigan?
Those specialty licenses weren't written into the policy in South Dakota, but the regulator is empowered to come up with different types of licenses. And I think that in South Dakota, we want to start simple, get the system up and running, and then maybe a year later go back and say, hey, look, we can do some different types of licenses. They've been used successfully in other states. Create these licenses. Let's try this out. I think it's about not overwhelming them all at once, especially in a state that's had no medical before. In Montana, again, I don't think any of those specialty licenses, I call them, are in the initiative, but the initiative empowers the Department of Revenue to create those licenses as needed. So it's going to be a similar situation. I think you're more likely to see something like that in Montana sooner than South Dakota. I'm not sure if Arizona had those different types of licenses in it. I'd have to check, and we'll see what happens in New Jersey. But it's great that Michigan's leading the charge on this, showing the rest of the country what can be done. You know, if we're going to allow people to congregate in bars and drink, there's no good reason why people can't congregate in a place and consume marijuana responsibly. And, you know, event, I kind of consider similar to that, kind of a one-time public consumption. So it's great that Michigan's taking the lead on this, and it's going to show other states what's doable, and it's going to help people like me get regulators to allow those types of licenses in other states.
Yeah, we just got to get rid of the monopolization of insurance here in Michigan. It's kind of cramping our style trying to get these things going when it's $9,000 a day just to insure an event.
I that's a problem I wasn't aware of. Sorry, I have to deal with that. But whenever something like insurance is monopolized, it's
yeah. There's one provider that will underwrite. Yeah, one underwriter. Yep.
Hey Matthew. So what's next for MPP? What's the next target?
Well, on the legislative side, there's a number of opportunities in 2021. States like Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and others, you know, Virginia, Maryland. There's a bunch of states in the Northeast that could potentially move forward on legalization legislatively. And my colleagues that handle the legislative work there, they're surveying the landscape and making decisions now to pick out which states to go after in 2021 on the legislative front. And on the ballot initiative front, we're still thinking about it. It's still very early for that. But there are some big states potentially that could be on the ballot for legalization in 2022. Ohio is a big potential win for our movement. A lot of people there would have a big impact. Missouri, which we tried to do in 2020, but the timing of the pandemic just killed our signature drive there. We were able to revive our signature drive in Montana during the pandemic, but given the tight timelines in Missouri, couldn't do that. So Missouri is another potential 2022 state. And then Oklahoma and North Dakota, I think, are both options for 2022 as well. And then there's some states where we could do what we did in South Dakota, potentially jump straight, do both at once, medical and rec. Idaho is possible. Wyoming is another ballot initiative state that has nothing on the books right now. So we're kind of surveying the landscape, figuring out what kind of resources we have, figuring out what kind of allies we have in these different states. And but those are just some of the states where you might see action in the next 2 years.
So you brought up resources. I know that the battle has been won here in Michigan, but the war is far from over. What can people do that are in the states that have already gotten legislation passed? What can they do to help the situation? Can they contribute money? Can they contribute time? How do they go about it? And how can our listeners get involved?
Thank you for asking. I think a good way to really support this work is to go to MPP.org, Marijuana Policy Project, and make a donation. That's going to go straight into our legislative efforts. And the legislative efforts are crucial. Like I said earlier, 24 states allow ballot initiative. The other 26 do not. And so in those 26 states, we got to pass things legislatively. Mm-hmm. So donating $5 or $10 or being a recurring donor to MPP, greatly appreciated. And then sign up to volunteer, because we send out emails telling people to call members of Congress, or call their legislators, get on our email list, throw in a little bit of money, and be part of the history that we're making together. But I can tell you that overall, and this is important, people think that there's all this industry money just coming in to legalization effort, that the big marijuana is bankrolling us. I can tell you, based on years of experience in multiple positions, I was the interim executive director of MPP for 10 months. That's not happening, okay? We are not bankrolled by big marijuana. We get not a lot of money from the marijuana industry at all. The South Dakota, Montana campaigns got very little money from the marijuana industry. And so we are not self-sufficient. We are underfunded as a movement. We are particularly underfunded on the legislative side. All those states I mentioned as potential legislative victories, it's unlikely that we'll pursue all of them. We're leaving victories on the table. So when you hear that MPP is, you know, big marijuana, it's not. What I like to tell people is I get accused of being a shill for the industry while I don't actually get the money from the industry. So it's like, yeah, both sides of the coin are shitty. I feel like I should either get all their money and be accused of being a shill, or not get their money and be deemed somebody that is pure. But instead, I get the bad part of both. Long-winded way of saying we're underfunded, and donating directly to MPP would really have a big impact. We are very efficient with the money that we get. We don't waste money on stupid things. We are very efficient and very economical. So your dollar is going to be well spent. So thank you for teeing me up for the donation ask. Yeah. I appreciate it, and appreciate all of you out there that have donated to MPP or donated to the Michigan campaign. Thank you all for making the work possible.
Yeah, that's according to Sam. You and Aaron at NCIA are in cahoots and completely shills for the industry. I get those emails. It's pretty entertaining. This is a lot of information.
Well, let me take a moment since you brought up Sam.
Okay.
People, maybe I shouldn't dunk on them too hard.
Go for
it. These people are so dishonest. And I want people to know, in Michigan, they ran TV ads that were so dishonest that I actually got TV stations to pull them off the air, which never happens. I mean, you think of America these days, how bad does your ad have to be where somebody can convince a TV station to take it down? I did that in Michigan. That's how dishonest they are. And they gleefully cheer when they yank the Nebraska Medical Marijuana Initiative off the ballot. And why they cheer so much? Because it's the only way they can win. The only way that Project Sam and the prohibitions can win is by doing sneaky things in Supreme Courts. They can't actually win in the court of public opinion. They can't actually win at the ballot box. So their only way is to weasel through the judicial system and get initiatives kicked off the ballot. And basically, I'm fed up with their lies. All they do is spread lies in different states. And in South Dakota, they were providing advice, I'm fairly certain. And the South Dakota opposition campaign ran ads saying that our initiatives allowed smoking in public, even though our initiative specifically prohibited smoking in public. And I don't even know what Project Sam stands for anymore. Now they're going around saying it's we don't have to arrest people for marijuana, but we don't need commercialization either. Like, just decide what you believe in. Because to say that we don't want to arrest anybody, but it shouldn't be legally sold, that is a position that literally maximizes the size of the illicit market. And that's a stupid position from a public health and public safety standpoint. They should just own the fact that they're prohibitionists, or they should disband and stop spreading lies. But they're new; they're constantly evolving, and now it's a really empathetic, loving thing that we don't want to put people in prison. But big marijuana is evil. Don't commercialize it. We just keep beating them, and it's satisfying because they don't really run honest campaigns, and they certainly didn't do that in Michigan.
I love it. You talk about the change in the prohibitionist arguments at the national level. Even locally, we've been speaking at meetings, for 10 years, and it's gone to where if you can't say you're against marijuana for medicine, but now it's, everyone's for marijuana as medicine. It's pretty entertaining. And then, then they come up with some wild reason on why they're against it. So it's funny watching that evolve. But yeah, when we got facts and science and the truth on our side, that's the only method. So, and what a great show, Matthew. We're wrapping up now. Before we do, I wanted to let Kevin and Tom and yourself have any final thoughts. Tom, why don't you go ahead and start it off? Anything you want to say?
I just wanted to say, keep fighting the good fight, man. Thank you so much for everything that you do.
Thank you, guys. And like I said earlier, I love Michigan. It was such a cool victory to be a part of. It was a campaign that had some problems and ultimately ended with real strength. Had a great team. I do want to give a shout out to that team, which Josh Hovey was our comms guy. Brandon Linaw was our kind of GC. Robin Schneider, Lissa Satori. They were all amazing allies, and it was a great win. And I love hearing about people succeeding in the industry and still passionate about this work. So I wish you guys the best of success in your professional and endeavors. Happy harvest, and keep kicking ass in Michigan. You're making marijuana reform look good.
Thank you. That's awesome. Kevin, you have anything final you'd like to say?
Yeah, I just want to, personally thank you, Matthew, for the hard work you did here in Michigan and getting us to where we needed to be. I want to echo Tom's sentiment. Keep the good fight going, brother. We got your back, and we'll do whatever we can to help raise you guys some more money. If you need more money to move forward, we'll do everything we can. Ryan and I are on it, and we'll make some progress for you. We promise.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, well, this is another great example of one of the great things about being able to do this podcast is we get to talk to the leaders in the world on what's going on in marijuana and get his cutting edge. And once again, Matt's doing stuff that's, going to change the course of in reality human history. So it's awesome. We appreciate it. And, thank you again for being on the show. And to our listeners and all the industry people that I'm talking to that are listening to the show that are new or from out of state and you didn't get to take part in legalization or the fight to get us here, join the fight with Matt said. Do your part now and help us go the distance. So, donate to MPP and let's keep this thing going. We got a lot of momentum at our backs finally, and it's nice to feel so. With that, thanks again, everybody. Thanks, Matt. And we'll see everyone next week.
Thanks, Ryan. Take care, everyone.
Thanks a lot.
The Smoke and Rope Podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Basor, the owner of Redemption Cannabis. Have ideas for episode topics or would like to be a guest on the show? Contact us at ryanb@redemptioncanna.com. Thanks for being along for the journey.